Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. We all talk to ourselves all the time. This kind of inner dialogue can be a good thing, helps us focus and helps us work through problems, but it can also go off the rails, turning into worry and negative rumination. My guest today calls this negative self-talk chatter, and in his book of the same name, he outlines how to get a handle on it. His name is Ethan Cross. He's a psychologist and the director of Emotion and Self-Control Laboratory, and we begin our conversation with the way introspection can be both good and bad, and the function of the voice in our heads. We discuss why negative emotions makes us want to reach out to other people and start talking, and how this impulse can be harnessed in either a positive or detrimental way. We then unpack how managing the way we talk to ourselves really comes down to zooming out and getting distance from the self, and how this can be accomplished with a variety of tools, from engaging in a kind of time travel to going out in nature. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/chatter. Ethan joins me now via clearcast.io. All right, Ethan Cross, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
So you're a psychologist, and you've spent your career researching and writing about something that people, you know, they do all the time, but they don't like to talk about it because they think they might be crazy. But you research how people talk to themselves in their head. How did you fall in that line of research when you were like a young psychology student? Why did you say, I'm gonna look into that?
Great question. Actually, it started before I was a psych student. So it started way back when I was a little kid. When I was like 3 or 4 years old, my dad, who was always really into Eastern philosophy and things that didn't seem very cool or exciting when I was a kid, he used to always encourage me to introspect when bad things happened. So if I was having trouble with something, you know, he'd tell me to go inside and try to figure out a solution to the problem so I could move on. And I by and large listened to his advice, and it served me well throughout my childhood and adolescence. And then I got to college and I took a class on psychology, and I learned that yes, introspection can be really, really good for lots of people a lot of the time. Bad things happen, focus inward, try to make sense of what you're feeling. And, you know, language is involved in doing that. Our inner voice, it helps us storify life. But what I also learned is that this process of going inside, it often backfires in spectacular ways. So people often do exactly what my dad used to tell me to do, but they don't end up feeling better. They end up worrying and ruminating and catastrophizing and engaging in what I call chatter, which is captures that the reverberating negative thoughts that often run through our head that lead us to feel like we're spinning. We're not getting anywhere where we're trying to solve a problem. And so the big puzzle for me was, well, why is introspection sometimes really helpful and other times really harmful? What distinguishes between the healthy versus harmful way of talking to ourselves? And I spent my career trying to figure that out.
And we'll unpack those differences. But before we do, like, what do we know about that internal dialogue that we have with ourselves? Does everyone do it? Like, how old are we when we start doing it, et cetera?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the inner voice, in technical terms, we're talking about silent verbal processing. So using language silently in your head. And this is an amazing superpower that we all possess, and it's one that serves many different functions. So the inner voice isn't just one thing. It's not just the, you know, the ongoing stream of thoughts that's narrating your life. The inner voice also captures lots of other things, like, you know, if I were to ask you to repeat a phone number silently in your head. So repeat right now the numbers 209-0501. Take a second to do that.
Okay.
Were you able to do it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's tapping into your verbal working memory, which your inner voice is involved with, right? Like, it's this ability to rehearse verbal information. And everyone who has a well-functioning mind can do that. It's part of the basic architecture of the human mind. Language helps us process information. But it could also help us do other things, like simulate how we're going to behave in the future. So before I have a high stakes speech, I'll often in my head rehearse what I'm going to say. I'll then imagine what an unruly audience member is going to ask me to try to trip me up. I'll hear what they're going to ask me, and then I'll hear myself respond. So our inner voice is helping us plan and simulate there. It can also help us control ourselves, like when you're doing a really difficult problem. All right, put this piece here, then put this piece here, and then do this. I'm, of course, projecting right now because I'm talking. That was an example of putting together like a kid's toy, which I'm terrible at. So, but that's another usage of your inner voice. So it does lots of different things. in terms of when it develops, some of the earliest research studies that speak to this suggest around 18 months. That's not to say it doesn't develop earlier, but that's as early as I've seen a documentation of it in a scientific article.
And when you say that everyone does it, this includes deaf people who can't hear it. I thought this is really interesting. Like what they do is they kind of have like an internal sign language dialogue going on with themselves.
Yeah. So there's evidence that people who are deaf, they basically talk to themselves, but using their sign language. So it's called inner signing instead of inner speech. So they're using the same modality that they use to communicate with people in the world. They're engaging that modality silently in their head. So, you know, I do want to point out that different people may rely on their inner voice to do different things more or less than others. A couple of years ago, there was a big hoopla on the internet about some people saying they don't have an internal voice or running inner monologue. You know, I think it's possible that those individuals may not constantly narrate their life. They don't have that inner stream constantly flowing. But at the other end of the spectrum, can they use language silently to do things like rehearse a number? Yes, that's a basic feature of the human mind.
And also this inner voice is fast. Like it's like you give this example, it's basically spitting out tons of State of the Union addresses in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, so we can talk to ourselves much faster than we can speak to other people out loud. And the reason for that is there are really two factors. First, when we're talking out loud, that's a complicated process. We take it for granted, right? But we're actually, there is a lot of motor movements involved. We're moving our mouth and our muscles, our diaphragm is going up and down. And so it's a complicated behavior, and we don't have to engage in the same steps when we're silently speaking to ourselves. The second thing is that although we can talk to ourselves in full sentences, like when I'm practicing what I'm going to say to someone else, I'll say it out loud. I'll say it silently in a full sentence, but we can also talk to ourselves in a more compressed form. So we're not actually talking to ourselves in full sentences. It's more like taking shorthand notes. Inner speech can take that more compressed form, and that gives us a lot of verbal punch in a short period of time.
So as you said, we have this internal monologue for a variety of reasons. Helps with our working memory, allows us to remember and call back numbers. But also there's researchers who've looked and just asked people, like, tell us what you're thinking, like stream of conscious. And it's usually the content of internal dialogue. So there's some of the, okay, I got to remember this thing. But then also it's just a lot of like, hey, I see this thing and this is what I think about this thing. I know this reminds me of this memory. Well, that's the other thing too, is that how oftentimes with our internal dialogue, there's a lot of like time travel going on, time jumping.
Yeah, I think this is really fascinating. We hear nowadays a lot about the importance of living in the moment. And I'm all for being present in the appropriate times. But I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that we spend a lot of time not living in the moment, traveling into the future and past. And that's not a problem. That's a really amazing capacity. It's an amazing capacity that distinguishes us from other animals, right? Like we can go back in time and reminisce about things that happened, experience nostalgia. We can try to figure out why we said that stupid thing that got us in trouble so we don't say that stupid thing again in the future. We can think about the future and try to plan fantasize. Like I'm regularly fantasizing about what I'm going to do when this pandemic ends, right? And I'm on a beach having a piña colada. So this ability to travel in time is something that we are uniquely equipped to do, and we spend a lot of time doing it. And so when you ask people what they're thinking about, they're often not in the moment. They're dipping back and forward in time.
And this allows, it's basically how we're trying to make, it sounds like when we do that, we're trying to make sense of our reality. It's all sense-making, essentially. Orienting
yeah,
ourselves.
I think that's a big piece of it. We know that, you know, human beings, we like to, in an ideal world, we would just navigate the world on autopilot. And when I say ideal, I say ideal in the sense of how you could effortlessly live life, right? You're just traveling along. You're not expending any resources to like make sense of what's happening around you. Cause that's hard work. Like making sense of things is not easy. You wouldn't want to be doing it all the time. And so when do we tend to try to make sense of things when we get stuck. And so, you know, the other interesting thing coming out of the studies that you referenced that ask people about what they're thinking, oftentimes, the majority of the time that people are having these verbal thoughts, they tend to be negative in their tone. So we tend to be talking to ourselves about problems. And I think one of the reasons why that's the case is because problems are often what we're trying to solve, what we're trying to make sense of. And that's why they occupy so much real estate, quote unquote, in our minds.
So you mentioned there could be some people who don't use this internal dialogue or voice as much as other people do. But there's that we've actually know of cases where people lose their ability to talk to themselves. And this happened to a person who's actually, I think she was a neuroscientist, correct? Like she...
Yeah, she was a neuroanatomist. I tell this story in Chatter and it's fascinating, right? So this woman has a stroke and she loses... The stroke is localized in a part of the brain that is involved in language. And so she not only loses temporarily the ability to talk to other people, but also to talk to herself. And initially she thought that this would be great. And initially she reported being elated. She no longer had the worries, the ruminations, that inner critic chirping up, telling her she wasn't good enough and so forth and so on. And that felt really good. But as time went on, what she realized is she also couldn't rely on her inner speech to help her make sense of who she was, right? We often use our inner speech, we have conversations with ourselves to figure out things about who we are as we navigate this world. It helps us, it helps shape our identity. And she lost that capacity, which ended up being quite problematic for her. So I think an important take home from that lesson is the inner voice, although it can be the source of a lot of pain, like when we're ruminating or worrying, it is not in and of itself a bad thing. To the contrary, it's an amazing tool. Like it helps us do a lot of things. It's just that it can slip into the negative territory when we start ruminating or worrying. And so when it slips into the negative territory, I think the challenge is to figure out how you can rein it in. And the good news is that there are lots of science-based tools to help people do that.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code manliness to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code manliness. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness. rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. So for example, you can learn The Art of Negotiation from Chris Voss. We had him on the podcast. Leadership from Jocko Willink, another AOM podcast guest. Writing from Malcolm Gladwell, another AOM podcast guest. You name it, Masterclass has it. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. So I did the Masterclass with Chris Voss on negotiation. Very well done. He talks about tactical empathy, how to mirror somebody so that you can develop rapport with them. So if you enjoyed that podcast I did with Chris Voss several years ago about his book, Never Split the Difference, you're going to love this Masterclass. And right now, AOM listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM. Check out the negotiation class with Chris Voss. And now back to the show. Well, you start off the book talking about how even you as a psychologist who studies and knows the research behind on what causes our inner voice to go negative and how to rein it in, you had an experience where chatter, what you call the sort of negative voice, just went crazy in your life. Can you tell us about that? Because I think it's relatable. I think a lot of people might have experienced something similar to what you've went through.
Yeah. Well, you know, before I tell the story, let me preface it by saying that there's a lot of research which shows that we're much better at giving advice to others than we are following that advice ourselves. And I unfortunately experienced this firsthand about 10 years ago when I received a threatening letter in the mail. And it really sent my chatter churning. So, you know, I had never received a threat before and it was scary. And, you know, I had to file a police report and that didn't do much to help allay my concerns. And so I ended up, you know, doing wacky things like pace my house until 3 a.m. with my baseball bat, making sure no one was coming after my newborn daughter and wife and me. And it was an experience where my self-talk, right, my harmful self-talk, my chatter was really taking over. I didn't have control of it. It had control of me. And it really negatively affected me for a couple of days. I could not focus at work. It created friction in my relationships because I kept talking about this concern to my wife over and over and over again. And, you know, she was trying to give me help, but I wasn't listening. And there's no question that it momentarily impacted my health as well. I wasn't sleeping. I didn't have my appetite. And so it really exerted a negative toll. Fortunately, I was able to break out of that funk after a few days using some science-based tools that we now know of and we know how they work. But when I was caught in the chatter, it was not fun. And, you know, this raises another question that I often get is like, how do you know when you're experiencing chatter? People often ask me that. And my response is you typically know it when you're experiencing it because it's really a very unpleasant state, right? It doesn't feel good to be so hyper-focused on this one problem that you can't think about anything else. So yeah, that was my personal experience with chatter and that I hope to never duplicate. Have you ever had something like that happen to you?
Oh, no, all the time. I've said this before on the podcast. I'm like Larry David, tend to be a neurotic, and I'll like think worst case scenario, and then I'll do that. And I've done what you did at like the low point for you during all this when you Googled bodyguard for college professors, thinking.
Let me preface that. I considered Googling.
Oh, you considered? So okay.
Actually, you know, it was when I actually started like typing it out before I actually hit enter. I didn't. because that was a moment that broke me out of this. And I thought to myself, Ethan, you are being insane. So, but carry on.
Carry on.
You've investigated bodyguards, like, or podcast hosts.
No, yeah, not bodyguards. But like, you know, whenever you get like some weird health symptom, right? You're like, well, I'm going to go to Dr. Google and great, I've got this terminal disease. And you're
you don't want to do that. It always ends with cancer. You don't want to.
Exactly.
Do that.
It always ends. So I thought that was interesting. So what's interesting about the voice in our head, whenever we experience negative emotions, one of the natural responses is that our internal dialogue actually starts talking more. And not only does our internal dialogue want to talk more, we actually want to talk more to other people when we have negative emotions. What's going on there? What causes that? Do we know?
Yeah, well, so negative emotions act like jet fuel that propel us to want to share what we're feeling with other people, with really two exceptions. That's not true when we're experiencing shame, which we tend to not want to share with other people, or trauma, which we often try to avoid. But the other kinds of negative emotions, anger, anxiety, sadness, there's a lot of research which shows that when those emotions activate, we're really motivated to talk to other people about them. So we talk more when we feel bad because A, we're looking for people to connect with empathically. We want support. We want someone to help us. We want to know that there's someone who cares enough about us that they're willing to listen. And so finding someone to talk to can be great for that, right? You're sharing your experience and you're connecting with another person. But what we also are looking for is advice or help broadening our perspective. So when we experience chatter, when our inner monologues take a wrong turn and lead to worry and rumination, we often like hyper-focus on our experience. We zoom in, tunnel vision. All we can think about very narrowly is the awfulness of what we're feeling, what we're experiencing. And so what we've learned is what can be really useful when that happens is to zoom out, to broaden our perspective. And other people are in a great position to help us do that, right? So, you know, if you come to me with a problem, you had a really bad argument with your partner, right? You tell me about it. So I hear a little bit about it. And oh, that sounds terrible. Like, so we're empathically connecting. But then I can do things like, you know what? But you know, you probably had arguments before and you got over it, right? So not the end of the world. So I'm broadening your perspective there. Or I could say things like, yeah, you know what? I've gotten into arguments like that with my wife over similar things. And here's how I deal with that situation. Again, like I'm shifting the focus away from you being so zoomed in on what happened to you that you can't think of anything else. And I'm trying to help you look at the bigger picture. And so other people can do both of those things for us. They can give us support and also advice. There's an important point I want to emphasize, though, which is this. In popular culture, we often hear that when you're feeling bad and experiencing chatter, what you should do is vent about your emotions to others. Just find someone to talk to and unload how you feel. The research does not support that being an effective tool for helping us work through our emotions. And the reason for that is when we vent our feelings, that does make us feel closer and more connected to the people we're talking to. Like, so no, like that's a good thing, but it doesn't do anything to help us help shift our perspective or change the way we think about things. So what you end up having happen is you get stuck in what we call a co-rumination session where you and I feel really close to each other because we're harping on how bad that thing was. Can you believe what she said? Oh my God, that stinks. I'm never going to talk to her again. But we're essentially like keeping the fire ablaze. We're not doing anything to work through the situation. So venting alone is not an effective tool for managing chatter.
And other interesting too about venting to someone else, like it might make you feel close in the short term, but the problem with negative chatter is that the more you do it, it sort of perpetuates itself. And if you keep going to someone with like, you're just your negative, just carping, like that actually turns people off and they're going to start pushing you away because they don't want to be around you anymore.
Exactly. So you know, that's one of the negative relational effects that chatter can have. It creates friction in our relationships because we just keep talking about it over and over and over and over again. And guess what? It's not fun to be on the other side of that conversation when all you're doing is rehashing the same thing ad nauseum. And so you know, chatter can affect us negatively in a variety of ways. It can undermine our social relationships by creating friction in them, in the way that I just described. It could get under the skin to influence our health by keeping our negative feelings alive over time. Like, that exerts a real wear and tear on the body that can be harmful. And it makes it impossible to focus on the task at hand. And for anyone who questions how that might work, you know, I would ask you to think about trying to read a book when you are ruminating or worrying about something. Right? The experience most people have when that happens is they read five pages, but they don't remember a thing that they've actually read because their mind was focused on something else. And so it can be a really big problem.
Well, let's talk about some of the tools we can use to rein in on this negative chatter. And a big part of it is, it's what you call, you have to distance yourself from the negative voice. What do you mean by that?
Well, so if chatter zooms us in really narrowly on the experiences that are driving these negative, you know, this negative inner voice, then one natural antidote to that is to zoom out, to, you know, quote unquote, take a step back and try to think about your experience more objectively from a broader perspective. And it turns out there are lots of ways to do that. And I'll tell you about just two to make it concrete. So one thing that I do in particular with respect to COVID, which is a chatter-provoking event, I think for many of us, is I'll do something called mental time travel. So I'll think about how I'm going to feel 12 months from now when I'm vaccinated. When I do that, what that little mental exercise does, that distancing exercise does, is it makes it clear that what I'm experiencing right now, as awful as it is, it's temporary. It will eventually pass. And that gives me hope. And we know that hope can be a really powerful tool for soothing chatter. I'll also go back in time. I'll think about the pandemic of 1918 and the fact that as awful as that pandemic was, and it was quite possibly worse than what we're experiencing right now, we made it. You know, you and I are sitting here talking right now as a testament to that. And so those are ways of helping me step back and see the bigger picture in ways that put my problems in perspective and that reduce the intensity of the chatter and improve the way I feel. Another distancing tool that people can use is to try to coach themselves through a problem like they were talking to someone else. As I said before, we're much better at advising other people on their problems than we are taking our own advice. And what we've learned is that language can provide us with a tool for getting distance and thinking about ourselves like we were someone else. And it's as simple as using your name or the second person pronoun you. So, you know, when I'm really stressed about something, I'm like, all right, Ethan, here's what you're going to do. And then I'll instruct myself along. That small linguistic shift it's like a psychological jujitsu technique. It's shifting my perspective, right? I'm no longer in the first person. It's now like, okay, here's what I would say to someone else. And that can be helpful too.
All right. So yeah, you talk to yourself in the second person, like Brett.
Second person. Yeah.
Second. Or is that right? I'm always.
Well, you know, if you're going to get the academic in me, you know, it's actually using your name as the third person. So we actually call it distant self-talk. The idea is we're breaking you out of thinking in I, me, my.
Okay.
And you're using words that you typically use when you think about other people, names or you.
And do you need to do this out loud or can you just do it inside your head, like internally?
No. You know, don't do it out loud if other people are around. That's a little disclaimer here. So, you know, in our experiments, in our studies, we always do it silently, ask people to do it silently in their head. If you're alone at home, you know, you could do it out loud if that works for you. I don't see why that would be problematic. If you do it out loud in front of other people, though, that will violate social norms in ways that I think you probably don't want to do because we're not used to people talking to themselves out loud. And so even though it might help you, there might be some social ramifications that you'd probably want to avoid.
And like, how quickly does this work? Like, as soon as you start having that internal dialogue with yourself, referring to yourself, that distant self-talk, how quickly does it silence or mute that chatter?
Well, what's interesting is that a lot of distancing tools are effortful. Like you've got to work at it for a while. And there has been research on this distant self-talk, which shows that you start to see reductions in how negative people are feeling within milliseconds. And so Jason Moser, a neuroscientist at Michigan State University, did a study where he had people look at pictures that were designed to really elicit a very strong negative reaction as he monitored their brain activity while people were using distant self-talk. And within a few hundred milliseconds, he saw a reduction in how negative they were feeling according to their brain activity.
All right, so it's fast. So yeah, like there's other distancing skills, like cognitive behavioral therapy is, that's what, it's basically just distancing yourself. It's teaching you techniques, but that can take a lot of effort, you know, thinking about, is this really the worst case scenario and blah, blah. But it sounds like this distant self-talk, it can happen right away. And like, how long does the effect last? Is it, if you do it more often, does the voice sort of just tend to quiet down permanently?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually don't have an answer to that question just yet. I don't know of research that has looked at how durable and enduring those effects are. But, you know, I do want to emphasize that there are no magic pills. You know, I think the formula for really being good at managing chatter involves using a number of different tools interchangeably. And I think one of the challenges that both listeners and scientists face is trying to figure out what are the unique combinations of tools that work best for different people in different situations. There are no single magic pills that I'm aware of. So when I experience chatter about something, I'll typically use a few different tools. I'll use distant self-talk. I'll use mental time travel. I'll find someone to talk to who's skilled at not just showing me that they care, but also can help broaden my perspective. And then I'll do other things like go for a walk in a green space. We know that exposure to green spaces can be really rejuvenating in ways that help us with our chatter. So I'll do that. So I'll like take the equivalent of a chatter cocktail to help me manage that state. And I think that's really the key. So not specific strategies, but combinations of them.
Yeah, that going out in nature was interesting and how it kind of quieted the mind. And the reason why it does that is because you're basically diminishing the self, right? You're feeling smaller, but in the process, it makes you feel better when that happens.
Well, there are a couple of different ways that nature helps, but that what you just described is definitely one of them, and that has to do with nature's ability to promote feelings of awe. So the emotion of awe, that's something we feel when we're in the presence of something vast that we have trouble explaining, like looking at a tree in the local park that's been here for hundreds of years through all the blizzards and all the other terrible weather. Like, this tree has been here. How is that possible? Or when you look up at the sky and think about the billions of stars out there, like, I can't even compute how many planets that actually is. And so what science shows is that when we have that emotional experience, that when we're in the presence of something vast like that, we ourselves and our concerns, we feel smaller by comparison. And that's a good thing, right? Like, we're no longer the center of the world and our concerns are no longer the center of the world. And that can be alleviating in terms of the chatter we're experiencing.
And as you mentioned, that time travel thing, another thing you mentioned, another tool is genealogy can be a useful thing to soothe the chatter. You just think back, well, my great, great, whatever, you know, came across on a boat and had lice and had to be quarantined for a long time. And now they went up and started a business and here I am today. If he could do it, I could do it too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I had, you know, grandparents who lived in the forest for a year during World War II and they made it. And, you know, boy, does that put the last rejection I got from a journal editor in perspective when I compare it to that. So that's another broadening, that's a perspective broadening tool that we possess. And, you know, these are simple mental shifts that can make a difference, right? That can make a difference in how we feel, but they're mental shifts that I don't think are always apparent to people, because when we're so consumed with chatter, it's all consuming. It's hard for us to remember that there are other ways of thinking about this that might make us feel better. And so one of my hopes with the book was trying to really lay out what all these different tools are, like show the science behind them to explain how they work so that people could add these to their repertoire so that the next time they experience chatter, they can activate them.
Yeah, it's good to have them in advance because as everyone might have experienced, once you start experiencing that chatter and you start going down that downward spiral, it's hard to get out. So you have to kind of stop it pretty quickly or else it gets harder. And you can see when people have gone down that spiral and you start offering suggestions. It's like, no, that's not going to work. No way. Like, you know, we talked about this before we got on, like you give this advice to your kids, like, hey, just talk to yourself, do some distance self-talk whenever you see them really frustrated. And they're like, that's so dumb. It's not going to work. This is the worst problem ever. And then they do it and they feel better, but it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, look, I think this is, without exaggeration, this is a multi-trillion dollar problem. I mean, if you look alone at the impairments we have, like in the workforce due to mental health issues that are chatter related, it's a huge problem. That doesn't even take into account the health concerns. This is something that I think our species has struggled with probably since we started talking to ourselves, quite frankly. I mean, you know, these are biblical problems. Adam and Eve and the snake, like people have been worried about stuff for a very long time. And so I think just understanding that is important for just normalizing this experience so that if people are listening and you experience chatter at times, like, great, you're a human being, but again, you know, the good news is that we evolved not only to have these destructive conversations with ourselves or harmful conversations, but we also evolved to possess tools to manage them. And I think that's, you know, that's the uplifting side of this story, is that there are things we can do to help.
So we've talked about managing or sort of reining in that negative internal chatter. Are there instances where internal dialogue is positive? Like we should encourage it, like encourage the voice in our head to talk more?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would not wish on my worst enemy a life without an inner voice, because our inner voice helps us do wonderful things like problem solve and innovate and create. And so you want to have that tool at your disposal. The problem is that when that inner voice is devoted to chatter, you can't use it to do all of the constructive things that we can do with it. And so that's why, you know, I subtitled the book Harnessing the Voice in Your Head. It's not about shutting it down. It's not about silencing your inner voice. It's about figuring out how to wield it. You know, by way of analogy, you can think of like a hammer. A hammer is an amazingly useful tool. I think no one would disagree with that, right? Like you could build houses and other things with it. But if you don't know how to use the hammer, or if you use it improperly, as I often do as someone without a handy bone in my body, it could be a destructive force. And so it's about how to figure out how to use the tool. And that's what the science that I talk about in the book speaks to.
Yeah, that one bit of advice is like, if you're going through like a tough, complex problem you're trying to work through, like talking to yourself in your head, it's like, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this. I've done that, and I found that it helps, and it's really useful. It's a quick little tool.
Well, you know, and we actually, like the internal dialogue, we didn't have a chance to talk about it, but like it's heavily involved in our ability to control ourselves. In fact, according to many psychologists, self-talk is how we first learn to control ourselves. So our parents, they give us instructions. They explain how to do things. Like, this is how you brush your teeth. You know, no, you don't say that to someone else. It's rude. And then what little kids do is they then go off in a corner and they repeat those instructions to themselves. So, you know, you said you've got a 10-year-old son.
Right.
When he was little, I'm guessing there were probably instances in which you saw him just talking out loud to himself. Is it fair to say that?
Yes. I still see him talking
still see him do it.
Yeah.
So like this is common. Like many kids will have like full-blown conversations with themselves out loud. That's how they are learning self-control. They're repeating what their parents are saying to them. And at first they do it out loud. But over time, they start giving themselves instructions silently using their inner voice. And we hold on to that throughout our lives. So we rely on that inner voice to control ourselves. So we wouldn't want to give it up.
Wouldn't want to give it up. Well, Ethan, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the book and your work?
They can go to my website, www.ethancross.com. It's K-R-O-S-S. And you'll be able to find information about me, my lab, and the book there. So ethancross.com.
Fantastic. Well, Ethan Cross, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Super fun. Thanks so much for having me.
My guest today was Ethan Cross. He's the author of the book Chatter. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can find out more information about his work at his website, ethancross.com. Also check out our show notes at aom.is/chatter, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM Podcast. Check out our website at artofmanliness.com where you can find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles written over the years about pretty much anything you think of. And if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the AOM Podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, sign up, use code manliness at checkout for a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android or iOS, and you can start enjoying ad-free episodes of the AOM Podcast. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate if you take 1 minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. It helps out a lot. If you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think we could something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay, reminding you not only to listen to the AOM Podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.